The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out if you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. And on today's instalment of I'm Talking to You, originally recorded and broadcast on Tuesday, June the 2nd, 2026, at achshow.com, I will be presenting a show entitled The George H.W. Bush Impression of Gary Sick. And the time is 8:07 a.m. over here in London, England, and it is nice to be talking to you again. Okay, so today's show title, The George H.W. Bush Impression of Gary Sick, relates to the YouTube video entitled When George Bush Threw Up in Japan, which you can find in the post for this show at achshow.com. For those of you who have never heard of Gary Sick, according to his Wikipedia page, Gary Gordon Sick, born April the 4th, 1935, making him 91 years of age, is an American academic and analyst of Middle East affairs with special expertise on Iran, who served on the US National Security Council under Presidents Ford, Carter, and for a couple of weeks under Reagan as well. He has authored 3 books and is perhaps best known to the wider public for voicing support for elements of the 1980 October surprise theory regarding the Iran hostage crisis and that year's presidential election. He also alleged that Iraq may have had a role in the September 11th attacks. And I want to thank my good friend Misha Popov for emailing me the link to the YouTube video When George Bush Threw Up in Japan earlier in the year. Okay, I also want to draw your attention to the proper name version of the King James Bible performances, as I call them, rather than readings, because they vary on the mood on the particular day that I do them. And readings in the strict sense would be like an audio book where it's very sort of, there's no mistakes, for example. I wish there wasn't in mine. I do correct them. If I make a mistake when I'm speaking, some words can be tricky. Sometimes the vocabulary, even though it's been updated, can throw you. For example, am I rather than I am. Things like that, they pop up and they sort of wrong foot you when you're trying to do a reading. But I left it as it is, so it was in its natural state. There were 9 readings or performances, whichever you wish to call them, of the book of Genesis. It was one of the longest books. I think Jeremiah is the only one longer in the Bible. They're all currently up on achshow.com. I only retain the last 20 broadcasts that I put out, so they'll start dropping off by this time next week. So if you haven't got that, it may be worth going there and downloading those, even if you don't want to listen to them straight away. Something that you could keep for the future. They total 4 hours and 3 minutes, all 9 parts, and the book of Genesis is probably, even for someone who hasn't studied the Bible, there'll be more in that you will recognize than probably any other book in the Bible. Okay, so let's see what I found of interest in the news since last week's show. So I'll just go over to the little tab I've got here, ITTY, well, it's a folder, stands for I'm Talking to You. Getting all my different projects muddled up. Okay, so first up we've got how dangerous are portable chargers on planes. I want to start off with a couple of news items I touched on last week. talking about portable chargers on planes last week. And essentially, I've never had one of these. I presume that these are like a, some sort of power bank that you charge up, and then if your phone runs out of charge on the flight, you can plug it into that and it'll run off that. That's what I'm thinking it is. I've looked at various backup power banks for where I live in an apartment. And unless you've got like a petrol-driven generator, something like that, which you can't really have in the apartment, not particularly safe, you might run a laptop off something for a few hours, but you're not going to run your fridge and all these other different things off it. You're not going to find something that can retain that sort of power. That's the, what I've discovered when I've looked into it, because it certainly is useful with what we could be facing in the future with power cuts, shortages. Of course, Dr. Peter Hammond, who will be, he's scheduled to be back Tuesday next week, he's discovered that power cuts in South Africa have become a way of life, and consequently he's had to invest in such things as generators and that to keep things going when the power goes out, so you don't, you know, lose everything in your freezer and it all gets spoiled and has to be chucked out. But essentially, these power chargers we hear about, I don't know, people leaving vape things up charging and they blow up and things like that. Some of these power chargers can do the same thing. And when they go, they go. And so in a sealed hold in an aircraft cabin, they can produce intense fire, which is why the crew say you can't have them in where the luggage are, is stored, because that's locked away and they're only going to know something's on fire when it's got really out of control, and obviously could damage the well-being of everyone on the aircraft, cause it to crash. So you are allowed them on planes, but they have to be with you in your hand luggage. That's what I've understood from what I've looked into. And recently, an EasyJet flight that was going from Egypt to London, it was diverted after they found, or some passenger admitted to having a power bank in their luggage. So presumably just made a remark to a stewardess or a steward, and that got back to the captain, wasn't happy, and so wanted to touch down as soon as possible. Okay, so, oh yeah, it says he notified cabin crew. Also, they said it was in use in the hold of the plane. So it sounds like it was charging something up or something, and they were worried about that. And they diverted to Rome, an airport over there. Okay, let's see what else I have here. Talked about the NHS last week and about a guy that was diagnosed with some sort of cancer, and he had So all these needles, injections to do with blood over, I think, an eight-year period, and then suddenly another check by a nurse who wasn't quite happy with what she was looking at discovered that he never needed to have gone through all this because he never had the problem in the first place, and it was referred to a personal injury solicitor, and the NHS Trust concerned had actually admitted fault. So now they were just coming to a conclusion as to what they were going to have to pay out to this guy in compensation. Well, I've got another story here, Daily Mail headline. Postman takes legal action against hospital after having surgery to remove cancer he did not have. And this is a guy called Mark Welland. He was 61. And this relates to the Royal Marsden Hospital in London, which is a big hospital when I was younger. There was the Royal Marsden Cancer Appeal, which was headed up by Jimmy Savile. Of all people, this is when people thought that Jimmy Savile was a national treasure, which is why he was heading up these. And he raised a fortune for Royal Marsden. It was always Jimmy Savile raising money for Royal Marsden, as I recall. Anyway, this guy had 40% of his pancreas and his entire spleen removed in surgery. But tests afterwards have found that he didn't actually have cancer. The lump that was there was actually benign, so they didn't need to take anything out. And he's gone on to say that he's now having all sorts of pain and discomfort. And as a result, he is going to be suing this trust. So again, his lawyers are called Stone Roe Brewer. They're based in Twickenham, which is where the famous rugby ground is, I believe. I've never been there. I don't like rugby. But they've said that It was the hospital's negligence that allowed the surgery to go ahead and caused the subsequent health complications that is now causing this gentleman the problem. Okay, let's move on to Bob Seger's Wikipedia page. Well, excuse me. I mentioned last week that I'd been to what we call a car boot sale in the UK. In America, according to Dave Gahari, it's a flea market. I actually had a conversation with Dave Gahari about a week ago. We have a catch up every so often. And one of the things that I bought at this car boot sale, what I like to do is, if I see a band or an artist that I know the name of, but I haven't heard anything by them, and they're from a sort of pop, rock genre, that type of thing that I do like music from, I think, well, if it's cheap, I'll give it a whirl, do you know what I mean? And a stall had the very best of Bob Seger. It was a double CD. It was in very good condition, looked new. Looked like a very nice sort of well-presented item, and I thought, I've heard of Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band, but I couldn't tell you any songs by him. And after listening to it, I couldn't tell you, I hadn't heard anything that I recognised from before either. And Dave said, you'll probably like it if you like sort of rock music. But as I was listening to it, I thought, yeah, this guy sounds like a pub singer. It doesn't sound anything special at all. It sounds like someone doing karaoke. And then I looked on his Wikipedia page, and it turns out that that was his appeal, that he sounded like the man on the street singing, and that's why a lot of people liked him. But I didn't find anything special in there, so I just thought I'd throw that in. I don't know why. I hope I didn't waste your time there. I'm going to try and wrap things up quicker on today's show, I will say. The last two shows, it wasn't planned, but I believe they both hit the 69-minute mark, which is a bit of an odd number to sort of land on two shows one after another. But it wasn't intentional, and I like to keep the shows as short as possible. Okay, so we've got next, I'm just going to give you the headline of this Daily Mail article, because I could draw so many inferences from this headline, many of which my democratic right to free speech would prevent me from going into in the UK. But Paul English used to say you could give him a subject or a headline, he could say he could talk for hours on that particular thing. Well, that's the way that I feel about this headline. There's so many different inferences and directions and conclusions one could draw from it. But as a result, I never even bothered to read beyond the headline. So if you want to, then you just type in Daily Mail into Google and you type in the start of this headline. The truth behind the Darth Vader data firm Palantir. Sadiq Khan blocked their £50 million Met Police contract, but those who have seen how it is transforming the NHS say it's saving countless lives. So I'll leave that to you if you want to type that in and look into it further. Remember that I mentioned how the mainstream media are absorbing certain elements of the independent media that they can talk about? Well, the Daily Mail came up with a story entitled Trudeau Rumours, subheadline Fidel Castro's daughter gives jaw-dropping reply when asked about rumours that late Cuban dictator is Justin Trudeau's real father. Now, the bulk of this article talks about fact-checkers saying that there's no evidence that Castro is Trudeau's father, because apparently the fact checkers say that his mother didn't visit or Cuba or meet Castro until 4 years after Trudeau was born. But the daughter of Castro, Alina Fernandez, was asked by Katie Pavlich, who said, for years we've heard rumours that Justin Trudeau, the former Prime Minister of Canada, could be your half-brother. What do you think of that? With a wry smile, Fernandez replied, the only thing I can say is that his mother used to visit the country very often. To which Pavlich then said, well, that may be a tell then. I guess that's half answer. Do you plan to call him and maybe find out? To which She replied, if I can get through all these photos. Fernandez answered, no, I won't do it. If he wants, he's going to be welcome, but I won't. I think he keeps that to himself, and you have to respect that. So, as I say, the bulk of the article seems to go into fact-checkers saying that they didn't actually meet until 4 years after Trudeau was born, but then you've got this remark by one of Castro's daughters. So, make of that what you will. The most important thing that I drew from it is I've known this rumour for years and years, but it's the first time I've seen it in the mainstream. So it would indicate, along with other evidence I presented, such as the book about Baron Trump's journey from over 100 years ago, that they are starting to talk about these things in the mainstream media, certain things that have been talked about in the so-called independent stroke alternative media for many years. This one I've thrown in here for my good friend Mark R. Elsis of earthnewspaper.com. Sorry, just take a little drink of water. I'll give you a little tip I learned, actually, because it's been quite hot here in the UK. When I go out, I always take with me a 500ml steel or aluminium, what have you, water bottle. And I was told not to drink out of plastic, so I avoid that where I can. And glass is another good thing, but I kind of... It's in one of these pockets on the outside of my rucksack, and I kind of throw that around, and I can imagine just sort of throwing it down somewhere and breaking a glass bottle. So I did look at a glass bottle recently, and I didn't end up buying it for that reason. But one thing that I found I didn't know about this is I've been out in this really hot weather, and even in my apartment, because it's been so hot, I will generally drink water through the day that I filter through my Berkey filter that I understand you can't buy the filters for anymore. Mine still seem to be good, so I don't know what I'm going to do when they wear out. But anyway, I pour it into a glass and drink it, as it were. But I've noticed that the glass is getting so warm so quickly in the warm weather that just by chance, I noticed that this aluminium bottle, if you want to call it that, half a litre, 500ml, actually keeps the water cold to the extent that when I was at that flea market, it was very hot and I got sunburned. I was sat on a bus going home. I'd been out for over 2 hours. And I went to drink from this bottle and the water in it was still cold. Now that in my apartment, about 10, 15 minutes would have started to get tepid. So what I'm doing at the moment, it's still warm, is rather than drinking from a glass in my apartment, I'm drinking from this particular aluminium bottle. I only have water out of it. I don't pour Coke or beer in it or anything like that, because I find when you pour some of this stuff, it can lose some of its fizz. But certainly water is working very well in that device. I know in Australia, they're very used to it. They have things known as a stubby. I think that they put like a can of beer in, and that's supposed to keep it cool, stuff like that. But not aware of those over here or how that keeps it cool. But anyway, let's go back to this article for Mark R. Elsis of earthnewspaper.com. Headline, again, Daily Mail. Plans for Beatles rooftop experience stalls after buildings neighbours claim it would block their sunlight. Now, what I've been doing is actually getting to know the article so I don't have to read word for word, because I remember Mike Sledge pointing out a few years ago that when you just read word for word, it can be a bit boring. So I've taken that on board. And what I've got from this article, you may remember back, I think it was in 1969, the Beatles did this impromptu concert on the top of the Apple Building, which was the last time that they ever played live. There's actually a picture of a plaque on the very building in this article, which says the Beatles played their last live performance on the roof of this building, 30th January 1969. Well, this was the Apple headquarters in London. It was at 3 Savile Row, and it was subsequently sold, but it's since been bought again by whatever company controls Apple now, and they're going to turn it into a museum. So you're going to have this Beatles Museum in London at the old Apple headquarters building, which I believe is 7 floors in height. I think it's going to be difficult to navigate your way around it, because I imagine there's going to be lots of narrow staircases and things like that. The building itself appears quite narrow, if it's just the half by the drain pipe with the front door. If it spreads over, it's not a big building by the looks of it, if you've got crowds of people going in and out. But they wanted to do something on the roof, and essentially some neighbouring buildings have objected. One of them was the, have a look here quickly. It was a Rockefeller building, or Rockefeller-owned building. Yes, it says here in the article, I will quote, Westminster Council received objections from wealth manager Rockefeller Global Investment Management over claims the building will cause the loss of daylight and sunlight and noise and disturbance. So there you go. That was reported by The Telegraph and being quoted in this Daily Mail article. So if you're into the Beatles, there's some very interesting photos in here as well. You might want to have a look at this article entitled Plans for Beatles Rooftop Experience Stalls After Building's Neighbours Claim It Would Block Their Sunlight. Now we're going to go over to nexusnewsfeed.com. which is a great little website. It's almost like 14 times online. And what they do, which is something Before It's News.com has started doing recently with their archive articles that I've touched on a couple of, is they, I'll give you the headline and you can look this up yourself. 1977, Virilian broadcast interruption, UK's unsolved alien warning that hijacked live television. I'll just give you the opening paragraph. On November the 26th, 1977, viewers in parts of southern England experienced one of the strangest broadcast interruptions in television history. During a southern television news transmission carried through the Haddington transmitter in Hampshire, the regular audio was replaced by a distorted voice claiming to represent an extraterrestrial authority known as the Ashtar Galactic Command. That takes us back to Before It's News again. They keep having articles about some galactic command advising what's about to happen. Nearly five decades later, the question remains, was this a technically clever hoax or something stranger delivered through the machinery of live television? So nexusnewsfeed.com, always worth looking at that page on a daily basis as I do. Let's go back to Karl Lagerfeld, who I'm aware of. I think he had his own, I had something by him at some point, I think. I wouldn't have bought it new, wouldn't be able to afford it new, but I probably bought it secondhand, a tie or something like that. But it turns out, I believe, that he was actually the long-term creative director of Chanel. And he died not so long ago, and he left, I think, a fortune of $150 million. $1.5 million of which was for his cat called Choupette. But the interesting thing I found here is there's been all sorts of disputes over the will. But it turns out, under French law, pets are not allowed to inherit money. So, I don't know how his will was created, but I'd very much be surprised if someone with that sort of estate would be, you know, doing one of these wills online or by the post. I would imagine he saw a solicitor, okay? So, if he saw a solicitor, I'm quite surprised that this solicitor did not point out that if you leave money to a cat, it's not actually going to happen because French law forbids it. And, of course, this all happened in France. So, that was what I got from this particular story. We've got this, I'll give you the headline again, Daily Mail, because you have to see the pictures to sort of do this justice. It's something that never really crossed my mind. But it says, highest garbage site, subheadline. The garbage bin at the top of the world, Mount... It's so annoying, isn't it? The Daily Mail. I don't know what they're thinking. I can't open an article by the Daily Mail now without some stupid little video popping up in the right-hand corner. And it actually causes the article to load up slower. And the video is not even remotely linked to the article. Okay? I don't know who's advising these people. And also, if you look at it on your phone, you're quite happy flicking away. And then suddenly, oh, you know, you can swipe left for the next article or whatever. And it's like, I think there's a dating site where you swipe one way or another. And if they based it on that, and completely out of touch. I think what it is that they're trying to do things that would appeal to a younger generation. And it just frustrates the generation that looks at their stuff. And I don't think it's going to work either. I certainly don't think that they're going to want to pay for a subscription, put it that way. So I think they're on to a losing streak here, but what do I care? So I'm going to start again. Daily Mail headline, highest garbage site. Subheadline, the garbage bin at the top of the world. Mount Everest's highest campsite is littered with abandoned tents, trash, and human waste video shows. Now, I didn't bother looking at any of the videos, but essentially you have these different camps going up to the summit. And people just leave all their... They leave tents up there. They don't... Oh, we're just... And it's not just tents. It's just all sorts of waste. It's just strewn over this huge area. And it's amazing to me because aren't these the sort of people that are supposed to care about the environment? You know, people that want to climb mountains and stuff like that. Interestingly, they do have these... because this is in Nepal... And I think that they're called Sherpas. Yeah, it says here in the article, in 2024, a group of Sherpas and Nepalese soldiers managed to clean up 11 tons of rubbish and retrieved 4 bodies from the mountain. So, of course, if you go up there, you don't quite make it, you drop dead. Then I don't think anyone hangs around to sort of bury you. A little bit too chilly for that. They might not even be able to dig into the ground. And they're certainly not going to bring a body back if they're not going to bring a tent back, are they? But anyway, the article goes on. The mission wasn't easy. It took 2 days for the team to recover one corpse, which had been completely covered in ice. The garbage left there was mostly old tents, some food packaging and gas cartridges, oxygen bottles, tent packs and ropes used for climbing and tying up tents. And Babu Sherpa, who led the group of Sherpas, said at the culmination of the clean-up initiative, some of the debris that the team found dated back 69 years. And interestingly, since September 2025, mountaineers have had to pay $15,000 for a permit to do this climb. Well, I don't blame the authorities for charging that if they're going to leave all this rubbish up there, but unfortunately that might give them the sense of entitlement that they, oh, well, we paid all this money, let them clear it up. It's a sort of vicious cycle or vicious circle or whatever you want to call it. Okay, then we've got, I mean, I'm not trying to pry, but in one's sex life, I remember, you know, being a bit embarrassed asking if a girlfriend would wear stockings and suspenders. Well, that's kind of a little bit tame compared to this article. Amputation fantasy. Former NHS surgeon who amputated his own legs for sick sexual fantasy is struck off. This is another Daily Mail article. And essentially what he did was he... wrapped his legs in dry ice to the extent that they required amputation. And this surgeon is actually someone who performs amputations himself. And after he did that, he then claimed nearly £500,000 in insurance payouts, saying that it was due to sepsis following a family camping trip. So, I mean... I don't know how much further I can go with this article, because if I start being critical here, then I might offend somebody who wants to do something similar as part of their sexual fantasy, and I'm somehow discriminating against them. So again, I'll leave that with you if you want to look further. There are some pictures that aren't particularly pleasant at the very start of it. Again, headline, amputation fantasy. Subheadline, former NHS surgeon who amputated his own legs for sick sexual fantasy is struck off. And there's apparently websites on there that of the eunuch maker and stuff like that. It's really quite awful. Okay, let's move on to the final one I've got. And it's, again, Daily Mail. Europe's controversial Highway to Hell, spelt H-E-L, 666 bus revived. Well, there is a seaside resort called Hell, H-E-L, in Poland. And the pictures in the article, it looks lovely. I mean, I wouldn't mind going there myself, quite frankly. But there's a bus that goes there, and it's a 13-hour bus ride if you get on at the start and you finish at the end, this place called Hell. It starts off in Krakow, and stops alongside other places. The only one I recognise here is Warsaw. And eventually takes you to hell. And the bus number was 666, as a play on, obviously, the Book of Revelation and hell and what have you. And some religious groups in Poland complained about that, said it's satanic and it's anti-Christian propaganda. So they stopped in 2023 and replaced 666 with 669. But now they've brought back the 666 number for the bus, which is again causing consternation from these groups. So just threw that one in for you. What I try and do here is I want you to hear on here something that you won't hear anywhere else in other shows you listen to during the week. So even if at the end of it you think, was it really worth my while? You will hear things on here that you won't hear on other shows because I listen to a lot of the other shows. Okay, so that's that for that. Let's go over to what I've got here in the something for you to listen to section of the show. And this is where I tell you about a song you can listen to via the YouTube link in the post for this show, which you can find at achshow.com. Today's song is Bruce Hornsby's Tropical Cashmere Sweater from his 2016 album Rehab Reunion. And here are the lyrics, which were written by the Grateful Dead's Robert Hunter. Just have another drink of water. Yep, still ice cold from that little aluminium bottle I was telling you about. And here are the lyrics to Tropical Cashmere Sweater. Solomon's mighty crew went out on a limb for you. Halley's Comet and Frankenstein had what's best for you in mind. Seven heavens spread through the highest skies for you. The door to forever open wide when you dare to step outside. Someone says it packs no punch. Another one says let's meet for lunch. Solomon says let's get to the point. We enjoin you to rock the joint. You're as good as money. In some ways even better. You're as good as cash on the line in your tropical cashmere sweater. Santa sent a St. Bernard. Mounted police go after you. When the weather was 12 below, your skin just about to turn blue. East of the sun invited you, west of the moon for a drink. Sat you down on top of the world, asking, tell me, what do you think? Someone says it don't compute. Another one says just sits there mute. Solomon says judge each other as you would your sister's brother. You're as good as money, in some ways even better. You're as good as cash on the line in your tropical cashmere sweater. Some days it just doesn't pay to blow a French kiss at the sky. It's so busy raining on you, seems like you'll never get dry. Get so mad you slap at the moon and beggar the stars for rhyme. That attitude gets nowhere soon, but you're a lover most of the time. Someone says you're all right, Jack. Another one says don't blow your stack. Solomon says in your position, call intermission and not come back. Be right back after pain and perdition. Hope you will be too if that's your decision. One thing for sure, there's no competition. You're the last one left, dear, after the intermission. You're as good as money, in some ways even better. You're as good as cash on the line in your tropical cashmere sweater. Okay. I think this is a wonderful song and have recently been listening to it on repeat over and over again. According to Google's AI overview, Bruce Hornsby's Tropical Cashmere Sweater is a whimsical, uplifting song about resilience, loyalty, and finding comfort in quirky personal connections when facing life's hardships. The song was co-written by Hornsby and legendary Grateful Dead lyricist Robert Hunter. It weaves a layered, slightly abstract narrative featuring these key themes and elements. First up, absurdity meets wisdom. The lyrics juxtapose absurd, surreal imagery like Santa Claus sending a St. Bernard rescue dog, or being stranded in sub-zero weather, with philosophical advice. The title itself acts as a metaphor. A tropical cashmere sweater represents an oxymoron, symbolising a comforting, luxurious shield against life's cold or unpredictable moments. Exceptional characters. The opening lines reference Solomon's Mighty Crew, Halley's Comet, and Frankenstein. This surreal mix of references highlights the remarkable, exceptional nature of the person the song is dedicated to, noting that a strong crew of people is there for them in times of need. Third up, Resilience in the Rain. The song acknowledges that bad days are inevitable. However, instead of folding under pressure, it encourages staying positive and embracing the support of your loved ones. Concludes with, the track is featured on Hornsby's 2016 album Rehab Reunion, notable for its bluegrass and old-timey instrumentation played entirely on the dulcimer rather than the piano. So again, you can find the link to the YouTube for this song, Tropical Cashmere Sweater, by Bruce Hornsby, in the post for this show at achshow.com. Okay, so now, this week's film review, it's something a little bit different. I have in my hand, well, I do now, the Clint Eastwood Dirty Harry collection on Blu-ray. You can also get it on DVD. It's got all five films, and I'll run through those in a moment, and each of them have got a commentary track. And last Thursday, I had a lot to do. I had one of those days where I started off early and didn't finish till about 7 in the evening. And during that time, I listened to the audio commentary of every one of these Dirty Harry films. So I don't know if that's ever been done before. All five Dirty Harry films, back-to-back audio commentaries on your headphones while you're doing the lawn and cleaning and all these other things that we have to do in life. The first one has a commentary by the historian and Eastwood biographer Richard Schickle. He also did a commentary on the Waterfront, the famous Marlon Brando film, which I listened to as well. The problem I find with Richard Schickle is he'll suddenly get in, and it's not just him. You find this when you've listened to a few commentaries with some people. They'll start really getting into watching the film, and they forget that they're there to do their commentary. And so you're sort of listening to the film with them. And the other thing is that the film is quite faint in the background because they have to lower the volume so you can hear their commentary above it. So he has a tendency to do this. But he pointed out some interesting things in the commentary. The Dirty Harry film, a cop was never portrayed like that before in film, but has almost entirely been portrayed like that after. And so Dirty Harry became the model for the sort of hard-nosed cop, you know. So without Dirty, I mean, think about all the cop films you can think of, something like, you know, would the Riggs character, Mel Gibson's character out of Lethal Weapon, would he be around if not for Dirty Harry? You know, the Harry Callahan character, Clint Eastwood. And the other thing, for me, probably the most frightening villain ever is the Andy Robinson character of Scorpio in this film. It's just shocking, and he is just so good in it that the director actually said to him, Don Siegel, afterwards, he apologised for ruining his career because it was such a good performance that even to this day, he's always cast as a villain of some kind. The other notable performances would be the lead role in the Hellraiser film, and he also played a doctor that was transforming into a wolf and attacking people in an episode of The X-Files. But he's a really nice character as well. I saw the other extras on the Blu-ray, and he's being interviewed, and he did just an amazing job. And so many of the things in there were his own idea. Some of the things he said when Harry Callahan's pressed against the cross in the park where he's beating him up, and other things on the train like hubba hubba, and all these things he threw in himself. When Harry shoots him in the stadium, he said he can do a jump in the air when he gets shot in the leg. And they said, oh, let's see that then. When he slides down the banister at the end, when Harry's chasing after him after he's jumped on the school bus and what have you, he said, oh, I can slide down that. Oh, let's see that then. So he did all these different things. And the other thing, I didn't know this. When Harry Callahan, Clint Eastwood, jumps onto the top of the school bus and he's hanging on that school bus, that is Clint Eastwood. He did that stunt. It wasn't someone else. I was like, wow. But really an iconic film. And it was followed up by Magnum Force, which the commentary was better. It was by the screenwriter John Milius, who would go on to be the screenwriter for Apocalypse Now, but also I think he was the director of Big Wednesday, which I didn't enjoy, but that was a film, I think I shared it with you before, that he, Steven Spielberg, and George Lucas did a deal that they would give people shares of the profits of a forthcoming film, and George Lucas felt that Big Wednesday would be a really massive grossing film. And so they traded I don't know how many percentage points on each, but John Milius gave him a percentage of the profits of Big Wednesday, and George Lucas gave him a percentage of the profits of Star Wars. And you can I'll leave it to you to determine who was the better off one in that deal. But entertaining commentary. The film itself is this is the one where you've got the cops that are actually killing criminals, this sort of vigilante type of thing. And then we move on to The Enforcer. And that was, I'll go through the years as well. Dirty Harry's 1971, Magnum Force 1973, The Enforcer 1976. And it was like an impromptu series. You didn't really have series as such. I mean, you could argue that A Fistful of Dollars, For a Few Dollars More, and The Good, the Bad, the Ugly were a series in itself that Clint Eastwood was also in. But the early 70s, you weren't having all these sequels, but the audience kind of demanded it. So 1976 was The Enforcer. This was the one where he was paired up with Tyne Daly as his partner. And so everyone sort of groaned. This was political correctness. And it was portrayed in such a way, but it actually, you know, had quite a sad ending, and it proved to be a very good film. And the way that it tackled it, it did talk about some of the ridiculous nature of how political correctness comes about. But it also showed how sometimes the best person for the job might not be the obvious person. And so I think the political correctness thing should be done away with, but it should all be down to the best person for the job, because in this case, as is proven later in the film, the Tyne Daly character really was the best person for the job, ultimately saving Harry Callahan's life. The fourth one, that one was, the commentary was by James Fargo, who was the director. So we actually had a director on this one, proper director's commentary. The fourth one, Sudden Impact, I don't believe belongs in the Dirty Harry canon. Not for me. I skip it. It's a nauseating little film. The best way I can describe it is it's almost, because Clint Eastwood actually directed this one, and it's almost as if he saw I Spit on Your Grave and decided that it was a bit too tame and he wanted to make it more violent, because it's a similar sort of subject matter, not one that I like the idea of, and I certainly don't like the execution of. I think it's probably a good word for both of those films. So I'll skip that one, but I did listen to the commentary. And the trouble is, it was Richard Schickel again. And where he was pausing was all these horrible scenes of people screaming and crying and all that. And at some point I went to reach for my phone to sort of forward it on. But I saw I was right near the end, so I'd endured most of it. I thought I may as well just put up with the rest. And then the final one, the Deadpool, I thought was a fitting conclusion. Sudden Impact was 1983. The Deadpool was 1988. And he's older, but he can still do a few things. And it's just a really good story. It's essentially Dirty Harry, Harry Callahan, is on a top 10 list of people that are most likely to be killed. And that list is held by a director himself that Harry ends up investigating, because people on his list start being killed, and he's on that list, so he's going to come up next. And there's all sorts of weird and wonderful things in it. A car chase with a little radio-controlled car that's got a bomb in it, going after Clint Eastwood's car with him and his partner in it around San Francisco, and all sorts of things. I thought that that was a great final film in the series. But there you go, that's the film review. So now let's see what's going on in the mainstream media right now. Let's have a look at the clock, see how we're doing. 44 minutes, okay, I want to keep it under an hour. It's a start, isn't it? Okay, so we'll start off with... I don't want to do AP, you've got all these things. Let's see if I can get the main headline. Republican senators want more answers on $1.8 billion settlement fund as Trump considers its future. I don't know what it relates to, because that's all that's come up. I think they're waiting for the big pop-up. Pentagon bars journalists from its press office. That's below that. Appeals court rules Trump policy illegally banned transgender groups from the military. It's still loading up. I mean, this is supposed to be a top news site here, and it's taking that long to load. Let's go over to, and then, of course, the news without an agenda that occupies half the screen that you have to endure every time you click onto AP.com, which is why I only ever click onto it on this show. Maybe I should abandon it for this. Top story on Reuters, Ukraine war, major Russian attacks hit Kiev and other cities. That's the main headline there. And again, another We Care About Your Privacy pop-up covering half the screen. We'll go on to have a look at what's going on in the Daily Mail right now. Let's see what's going on here. Top story, I can't breathe. Moment police handcuffed Henry Nowak and left him to die alone as his Sikh killer branded him racist. Allegedly what happened... Well, I believe that the guy's been found guilty. I think got 23 years in prison, as I recall. A Sikh said that some guy had called him a racist term, and that's why he stabbed him. And the police are alleged to have, well, it seems to see that they're handcuffing this guy who's been stabbed, and he ends up dying there and then, because he allegedly was accused of calling him a name rather than giving him medical attention. But... it's not, I've seen this happen in other countries as well. They're starting to, you know, justify violence, even leading to death, if somebody called someone an offensive term before. Well, I was always brought up with sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Of course, now it seems that hurty words are regarded as more of a crime than murder. So that's what seems to be going on. And then we've got Labour's poisonous... puppet master and a £1 million cover-up. The 1,500 new pages are a sea of Tippex, but they still expose malign backbiting of a peer for whom Starmer sabotaged his own career by making him US ambassador. And, yeah, that's about Peter Mandelson. Obviously, some more papers relating to him came out yesterday. I'm not really too interested, quite frankly. So let's have a look at BBC, have a look at their top 10 stories. I'll wait for that website to load up. Scroll down. It's about just below halfway down the page you have to go for the most read. Number 10, these are the headlines. Cave markings dismissed for years, confirmed as Britain's oldest prehistoric art. Number 9, Toy Story 5 shows terror of children's screen addiction, says Tom Hanks. Number 8, mornings and nights no longer exist at 47 degrees Celsius, a day in the hottest place in India. Number 7, third of people say uni degree not worth it as student loan inquiry begins. Number 6, how former Scottish National Party chief executive Peter Murrell spent the £400,000 he embezzled. Number 5, body found after river search for missing boy aged 11. Number 4, massive Russian attack on cities across Ukraine kills at least 13 people. Number 3, Mandelson files lay bare frustration and the welfare party. Number 2, Trump inserts himself into the centre of America's 250th birthday celebrations. Number 1, murdered student did not die with dignity, says family. And I believe that relates to the top story that I covered in the Daily Mail article there. So I'll just click on it just to check if it's that same guy, Henry Nowak. Yeah, so this is something that's going on and on. Right, let's move on to see what's going on in the independent media. I'm going to start off with rents.com. So let's just scroll down here, see what's happening. I've got the stories there queued up. I did notice, actually, one thing I will share. As I'm a subscriber to Rents Radio, let's do this first. So, top story, Trump attacks Iran again, hits radar sites while Kuwait reports Iran retaliatory strikes. Rentsradio.com, which you subscribe to get all the archives of the Jeff Rents program, they've got a new system here for where you can actually look up the... When you're a subscriber, I've got to go into my subscriber section. Sorry, let me quickly do that. Because I've been through a few times, I've been through the very start, I think, 93, 94, right up to present day, and just scroll through all the shows. And you're looking at weekdays, every weekday, going, you know, for all those years. You've got 3 hours every Monday to Friday. But he's got a new search engine here that I looked at earlier. So if I click it, as I say, you have to be a subscriber for this. But I tried it earlier, and you just type in someone who you want to look for example. So I did, I just typed in Griffin for G. Edward Griffin, but I'm going to type G. Edward Griffin because it brought up a guy called Craig Griffin. So I've typed that in and then hit enter, and you can limit it to... You can limit it to sort of particular years, months, etc. And it's actually, it's given, there's only a few that he had G. Edward Griffin on. And so I can see here that only six have come up. So it didn't work with G. Edward Griffin, but it worked with Edward Griffin. So again, this is quite useful. I might go in again and if there's ever something... It'd be a lot easier than going through everything, just being able to sort of type something in. Because I was actually looking for a G. Edward Griffin episode recently, and I had a rough idea of where it was. I was sort of close, but it took a while. It would have been a lot quicker to do it this way. But anyway, that's a new service on the subscriber platform for Jeff Rents. It says here, total episodes 20,684. Archive range 1994 to 2026, so 32 years. There you go. Search through all these hours of historical radio broadcasts, find specific guests, topics, or rediscover broadcasts from specific years. So I, for example, wanted to hear what Jeff Rents' broadcast was the day after, straight after the September 11th attack. So that would have been on that day, because, of course, it happened in the morning, US time, and he broadcasts in the evening. So there's all sorts of things you might want to look at after Oklahoma bombing. He was doing shows in 95. So different things. Was that 94, 95? I think it was 95. Okay, so let's go over to halturnerradioshow.com. See what's going on over there. The top story, Iran talks collapse, diplomatic discussions cut off. And now we'll move on to go back to, we visited it earlier in the show, I mentioned him, Mark R. Elsis website, earthnewspaper.com. His top story is a video, stop telling me to use AI, the AI backlash. And apparently nobody wants AI anymore. Well, I didn't want it in the first place. It is sometimes... I've never specifically sought out a search engine, but for example, that description I gave you of the Bruce Hornsby song Tropical Cashmere Sweater, that came from Google AI. I didn't ask, I just did a Google search, and sometimes you get a Google AI result at the top, sometimes you don't. And I thought that that was useful because I'd read a description of the song on an actual Bruce Hornsby website, and I thought that they completely missing the point. First off, they were talking about Bruce's wonderful lyrics. Well, he didn't write it was Robert Hunter. So when you see something like that, you think, well, if they've even got the person who wrote the lyrics wrong, how much else of their conclusions do we want to trust? So that's the top. There's a video there, but let's scroll down and have a look at some of these articles. There's one here, Frank Wright. His website is frankwriter.com. And... says, the state we're in, a documentary about the crisis we all inhabit. We find ourselves in a terrible state today. How did this happen? Why did it happen? What, if anything, can be done to get us out of it? For over a century, we have been ruled into compliance with the liberal system. The central technique of this system is the rule by media. It is effective because it uses not only the news and entertainment, but all forms of cultural production to make us believe in this system. I've said in the past that in the UK the laws haven't actually changed, but the media has effectively narrowed the Overton window in which one can express oneself. So, for example, if the Public Order Act of 1985 says words that are abusive, harmful, insulting, these sorts of things, the interpretation, or rather the allowance for that, was a lot broader a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Essentially, it's been shrinking over time. And in my opinion, the way that it shrunk is by the mainstream media reporting what is and isn't acceptable. And not just in the in the news. You will find storylines in television programmes that will give you the message that they want you to believe. And so what we're being told, I had this article up, I was going to talk about it, but it was sort of one of these alleged things. And it related to, it was alleged in a biography of Nigel Farage that he was blocked from appearing on Desert Island Discs, a BBC radio show that's been going on for one of the longest radio shows in history, where a famous person picks a number of records that they would take with them if they were stranded on a desert island. Anyone who's anyone famous has appeared on there at one time or another. And the allegation was that Nigel Farage was not allowed to be on there because it would offend some of the woke backroom staff that worked on it. Well, the BBC had come out in this article and said that's not true. Nigel Farage would be, we haven't blocked anyone from appearing on there due to political opinion, that sort of thing. But the way the article was written was trying to what they want you to think is that Nigel Farage and Reform are the furthest, they're so far right, it's like GB News is the furthest thing to the right that there is. They want to tell you, they want to define what it is for you, so you don't go beyond the parameters of what these people say, and even if you go there, then you're already wrong. That's the message that I get. Maybe I'm misinterpreting it, but that's how I feel, and I certainly feel the way one is allowed to express themselves in the UK has been greatly limited over recent years, and I don't believe that that was by accident. Okay, so let's finish off then with the Before It's News top 10. So we'll wait for that to load up. I believe I've covered everything. I'll just look at my little notes here to make sure I have. Yep, okay, so scroll down. Has it loaded up? Yes, it has. Number 10, went up 12 hours ago, 60 people viewing. Live, the prophecies of Trump, Iran war and UFO disclosure were predicted decades ago by Billy Meyer. Was it Billy Meyer who was in the first episode of The X-Files? Was that Billy Miles? I don't know. So did I say there were 60 people viewing that one? Went up 12 hours ago, that was number 10. Number 9, went up 14 hours ago, 60 people viewing again. Gene Decode, Big Intel, 6126, the new announcement from us. Or from US, I don't know. It's got a small S, so I presume it's from us. Number 8, went up 14 hours ago, 64 people viewing. News treason, full intel drop, 6126, Trump threatens them all. Massive Q military mission, it's go time. Number 7 went up a day ago, 73 people viewing. Ricardo Bosi, Gene Decode and Michael Jaco. Nino 6126, mass traumatic event incoming. Number 6 went up 15 hours ago, 76 people viewing. And we know 6126, Iran, a marker. News unlocks the map, insurgency. Buckle up, here we go, pray. Number 5 went up 3 hours ago, 94 people viewing. Byington bombshell report. SCOTUS ruled no income tax, replaced with 14% sales tax. Prepare for, and then the headline runs out. Number 4 went up 9 hours ago, 105 people viewing. New X22 report. Trump revealed the deep state plan months ago. His latest move completed the headline runs out. Number 3 went up 15 hours ago, 122 people viewing. DEFCON ZERQ. Oh dear. Josh Reed and Alpha Warrior, 6126, Trump and the Q plus comms light up, the day is coming. Number two went up 5 hours ago, 142 people viewing. Judy Byington, Juan O'Savin and Obama, 6226, military mobilised worldwide for takedown. And number one went up 8 hours ago, 278 people viewing. David Nino Rodriguez and the Ghost Bombshell, 6226, were about to expose it all. Okay. Well, that brings us to virtually the end. Before we go, I want to thank Mark R. Elsis for putting links to this show on earthnewspaper.com. I want to thank Jeff Rents, likewise, for featuring this show on rentsradio.com. I want to thank Dr. Patrick Slattery and Mark Dankoff for mentioning the show on what's becoming a regular partnership for them every Friday on Republic Broadcasting, republicbroadcasting.org. I go to republicbroadcastingarchives.org on the Saturday to pick it up on the download. And Patrick even said that he's going to start referring to that show with Mark as the Dankoff Report, which was what I started doing with Mark. It wasn't really my idea. It was after Dr. Adrian Krieg sadly passed away. I didn't want to continue doing the show called Generations because it was our show, the three of us, you know, and I felt it would be wrong to continue it without him. So I had an idea. The idea came to me, if you remember Michael Collins Piper, when he was on RBN, he had the Piper Report. So I said to Mark, you know, what do you think of the Dankoff Report? And he liked it and went with that. But it wasn't really my idea because I took it from Michael Collins Piper, but Mark subsequently has run with that since when he's been doing other shows. And it's always nice to listen to these two guys because the three of us used to work together a lot in the latter days of the guest element of this show when I was going out a lot more often than I do today. But that being said, next Tuesday I expect to be going out with Dr. Peter Hammond. So let's play the closing music. And that means this show will be on next week, but it'll probably be Wednesday, Thursday, something like that. So I want to thank all of you for joining me for I'm Talking to You, episode 262, the George H.W. impression, the George H.W. Bush impression of Gary Sick. I'll be back with you all with a Bible reading tomorrow. Until then, folks, thanks for listening and bye for now.